Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. Explore the mind of MLB All-Star, Silver Slugger, and Gold Glove winner, Brett Boone, as he sits down with his friends from the world of professional sports. Now up to bat, Brett Boone.
And we're going to get to this in a second, being on the East Coast. The East Coast is a different animal.
Yeah.
As a player, I really appreciate that. The passion, the craziness. And you alluded to earlier, it's not, and I think I said this to you on WFAM. It's not 1946. Okay. the Yankees aren't just the bully in the room. It is a different, there's 30 teams that, like you said, the postseason, it's a different animal. There's 12 teams. Anything can happen. And we've seen that in modern times. It's not USC. I went to USC. Okay. They're known for all their national championships under Rod Dedeaux. He won like 100 of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not 1964 anymore, where USC is the bully and everybody goes to USC and steamrolls everybody else. The SEC is now the class of college baseball.
Yeah.
It's a different world. Now, I appreciate the passion of the New York, back east for that matter. I used to love coming to New York because you're passionate and you're going to scream at me. And when I do well, You're gonna give me my props too.
That's right.
That's an eye for an eye, and that was great. Walking down the city in New York on a random Tuesday, playing the Yankees that night, I'm going to get a coffee, and a random guy from across the road, yo, Boone, you suck. You guys are gonna get your ass kicked tonight, and it's great. I used to smile. They weren't really angry at me. That's just the way the New York fan is. I go to Yankee Stadium. I go 0-for-4 with a couple punch outs. Oh, I'm gonna hear it. On deck, I'm going to hear it. But if I go to Yankee Stadium, go 3-for-4 with a 3-run homer, and we won, and I walk after we're shaking hands after the game, and I walk back to the dugout, those fans that are hard on me, they're giving me this one. They're giving me this one.
They are.
And it was a respectful appreciation for player, fan, player, and I love that about the East Coast. I never got to play there. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to in the end. You know, you can go to Philly. Philly's a little different. You know, I grew up in Philly. I watched my dad. I watched Mike Schmidt get booed out of the stadium. One of the greatest of all time.
Yep.
But the one thing they are, and as a player, I've learned to appreciate. I love the passion. I don't care if you yell at me. I love going on the road and getting yelled at. I don't take it personal. Mm-hmm. I just know you want your team to win so bad. But when it comes to New York, it's just...
It's different.
We got to win championships. The Jeter, Posada, and I don't want to leave anybody out. Bernie,
Tino,
Paul O'Neill, one of my favorite guys.
Yeah.
Mariano.
Mariano.
People got to realize that was such a special group. They just weren't that much better than everybody else. They had intangibles. They had little things, little nuances that made them great. That's a once in a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So, but New York takes that on as, well, we need to get back to winning back to back to back. That doesn't happen. The fact that the Dodgers won two in a row, that's unbelievable. And they were this far away from losing to the Toronto Blue Jays. But they did it.
Yeah.
It's just, it doesn't happen. The Yankees of the 90s and the early 2000s, that's a unicorn. So that's the one thing I laugh about back east and here in the New York commentators, the Yankees, we and the fans, we accept nothing more than a World Series championship. Oh, okay. Get to the postseason every year, you go deep. You have to at some point realize that this is 2026. There's more parity. The postseason is much different than it used to be with the wild card, and there's so many landmines out there. That man, when you win a World Series, it's way easier to get there to the postseason. Way easier. But once you get there, it's much harder. So I don't think being a world champion is any easier than it was now versus 1970 or when my grandpa played or when my dad played, because they had to win the division. It was the East and the West.
Yeah.
And there were two teams that go to the postseason.
Yeah.
Two teams.
Yeah.
To win that marathon. And actually, a lot of me, from an entertainment standpoint, I love today's format. I think it's entertaining. I think all the cities are in it much longer.
Mm-hmm.
But the purity and the old school in me thinks, man, I love that 162 because, man, when you're done and you get to the postseason, you earn the hell out of that. You won 162 games and you beat everybody. But today's dynamic and the TV and the money, I understand why we got to do it. And I really enjoy it. And I think the postseason's been really entertaining.
I think it's so much better for the game. Now, it's penalized my team a bit, but you know, I've always been about the greater good because I love the game. You know, like it's funny, you reference like back in the day, the East and the West. It's like, all right, I mean, who the hell's really beating Johnny Bench and Pete Rose and Concepcion and Joe? You got the big red machine. All right, so you know that they're going to be locked and loaded. And if it's not them, it's Garvey, it's Davey Loebs, it's Ron Say, it's, you know, all the Dodgers. If it's not them, it's Reggie, it's Munson, it's Nettles, it's Goose, it's Guidry. It's changed a lot, which is, I think, big picture and macro picture, good for the game. But something you said before about the, I wanted to trace back to this, the respect that whether it's a New York or a Philly or a Boston, those hotbeds of emotion on the Eastern Seaboard, you know, like I know as much as like I if I could have taken my hands and grabbed Reggie Miller by the throat, literally during those series with the Knicks or Michael Jordan, and like try to choke them out, you know, I would have tried because they were getting in the way of what my team was trying to do. But every time they got the ball, every time Reggie released it with that unorthodox shot, I'm like, God, it's going in. Every time MJ had the ball, I'm like, he's going to cook us. It's the ultimate level of respect. And as long as it doesn't cross the line, like I know Philly fans, I think it was JD Drew, threw batteries at him. Like that's just the height of that's insanity. But as long as it doesn't cross a line, whether it's racist or it's completely off color where you wouldn't want kids hearing it, I think most people get it. I think most people are great fans. Now you got, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8% that are a little bit too in the wrong direction. But I think that people get it. And I don't know why maybe it's because baseball wasn't out west until the Dodgers and the Giants went, like west of the Mississippi, it was just the Cardinals and that's it. And back in the day, you had, you know, Duke Snider and Pee Wee and the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Giants with Willie Mays, like, boom, and the Phillies were really good. And the Red Sox had Ted Williams. But I don't know if you have a theory on this. The East Coast passion versus the West Coast passion, why is it so different? Why?
It's night and day.
But why?
I'll give you an example. If you're, and I love Seattle, and that city was so good to me, and you know, the home team, I walked down the street in Seattle during those early 2000s, and some days I didn't want to go to lunch because I wasn't doing well, and some days it was great. When things are great, it's easy to go out. You're going to get adulation. But on the West Coast, what I notice is Padres doing great right now.
Yeah.
They've done a really good job of that franchise and they've really marketed it well. It's the place to be downtown San Diego. But I will guarantee you, if any other team came to town and just went to the beach in Del Mar, California, nobody would recognize any of the players. That's a difference between going to New York as a Mariner and me walking down the street. These guys know the players.
Yeah.
It's not Yankee Stadium. It could be a destination of a place to be, but it's more than a place to be. It's no, our team's playing tonight and we got to win. San Diego, you go to a packed house. Yes. Now it's picked up some speed. Padres have been good the last few years. Mm-hmm. People are there to watch the Padres win, but it's more of a casual, we're going to the game tonight. We're going to the Padre game. And they're not pissed when the Padres lose. They're going to wherever you come out of Yankee Stadium. Those fans are grumbling on the way out. When the Yankees aren't playing well. Mm-hmm. Once again, as a player, I couldn't wish for a better thing. There's nothing better than playing well, beating a team on the East Coast, and them yelling at you. There's not a higher form of flattery. Like you said, the Miller, the MJ. You don't think when Miller was beating you at the buzzer, probably getting death threats. He didn't think it was the greatest thing on earth. Like, I am so deep in their head, and I could sleep tonight and just know the whole city hates me, but they hate me for a reason because I'm beating the crap out of you. It's a cool feeling.
I agree, man.
How about this? Do you worry about now? I think there's a different pressure in New York for doing what you do. And I know how big of a competition is it in New York with the style? You go to Kansas City, the talk radio show. Yeah, they're going to be a little tougher than the commentators are. Mm-hmm. You go to Seattle, they're going to be a little tougher. But for the most part, I've been to enough cities. You go to New York, you are on that hot stove every day, all day. And now with all the outlets that they have with the today being the way it is, how much is it a competition of how do I stand out in this field where everybody seems to think the more outrageous is the best way to go?
That's a good question. Like, I love the pressure. To me, it's I've always been very motivated. I've always been very self-motivated. But that's going to keep you on your toes for sure. Listen, I think the biggest difference here, Brett, is that you look at sports radio literally was born on WFAN in 1987, right? And then all the, JR is good out in Seattle. Like, I know all the stations in the country. Detroit's pretty good. Philly's good with IP. Like, Boston's got a couple of powerhouse stations. But everybody took the blueprint from WFAN. So every one of us, right, that's around my age or slightly younger or even slightly older, grew up listening to, at least in our estimation, Ruth and Mays, in terms of Mike and Chris, Mike Frances and Chris Russo. So not only is the energy a little different around here and there's a team, multiple teams for every single sport, but you are also held to a standard because the style of Mike and Chris was loud and confrontational and combative and energetic. And that's what pulled me in. So while we were crafting our own broadcasting voice, even though I'm pretty much the same dude on the air as I am off the air, which I think is easier for me. I don't have to flip a switch and turn into a lunatic. I'm just naturally passionate and naturally energetic. But everybody, when you hear us, it's like watching a certain style of a sport. You're going to, everybody's going to try to shoot like Steph Curry right now, and they have been for the last 12, 15 years. Everybody's going to try to stripe a golf ball like Tiger Woods, going back to when he burst on the scenes. You're a product of what you're exposed to. So we were exposed to Mike and Chris. And if they were maybe, if they had a much calmer demeanor now, probably wouldn't have fit New York. But I don't know if we'd see quite the lunacy that we see today. It's almost like baked into our DNA. And, here's one thing I know. It's different now doing my own YouTube show and stuff. But and I love it. It's a great challenge. And I'm thrilled that I'm doing it, right? And I'm really excited about the future. But the one thing that I always had, and it always served me well, it was almost like my own quarterback clock. So you're a quarterback, 1001. All right, you get to your third step, your fifth, seventh step, whatever the play is, right? I've got X amount of time to see what's in front of me and get rid of the ball or I'm getting hit, right? And I have a very similar clock in my mind where, all right, if I feel the show's going a little stale, which is rare because especially with Sal, we were both very high energy. So it was maybe too nuts, but never stale. I know I'm like, all right, and it's getting a little flat. I got to inject something. I got to throw a spark out there. And I do that because I know what sparks me. And I'm no different from most of the 8 million people that live in the tri-state area. We are more wired to do battle than to be passive. And I think that translates, back in the day when the newspapers ran the scene, you wanted that aggressive writer who was, ripping somebody or George Steinbrenner or whatever it might be. And that translates to the audio component as well. And now the visual component, I think we're just drawn into that. So I know I gave you a lot there, but I do think that there is this, even if everybody doesn't know that they're doing it, you're trying to, on some level, replicate the initial style of Mike and Chris because it was so good and so amazing. But it also fits the backdrop of the city and the energy of the city. But yeah, you got to know that it's okay. Like, you can't just make stuff up. Like, if it's a hot take and it's clickbaity, you're going to lose the belief from the fan base. And I'm not saying I haven't had my moments where I veered off and maybe I got a little hot takey, unintentional. But the thing that I think that I've always had with the majority of my audience, and I cherish this, is that they know that I'm invested in it like they are. They know I'm sure that they know that I know my stuff. And they know that I care like they do. And I think if you can do that, you're going to do well and you're going to have a following. You're going to make some money and do some good things. But there's also many other people trying to do the same thing. And over time, the volume just keeps going up and up and up and up and up. Now you got First Take, Instagram, YouTube shows. So to stand out, it's a lot harder and you got to push the envelope a little bit.
Yeah. No, and I think, if I try to just pull myself away and be a fan for a second, it's like, first of all, I need to see authentic. The guys that are doing it, that are authentic about it and authentically passionate versus the guys that, oh, I've got to be really crazy right here. And it's the writing's on the wall. It's simple to see.
Uh-huh.
But for you, doing this as a player, okay, I'll give you another example. I always like to use the baseball, the player analogy to make a point about media. Mm-hmm. As a player in Seattle, I had a shtick. I was the Boone. You know, I was this guy. I was bigger than life. And I said, you know, I was quick. And, you know, watch what you say or he's going to get you.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it was at that stage of my life, I had been at the top of the mountain. I'd been at the bottom of the mountain. I was more humble than people knew. I was always known as cocky and brash, which yeah, I was.
Are. Yeah.
But you know what? When the cameras were off, I had such an appreciation for how hard this game was. And I'd been at the bottom and I tell people, check my bubblegum card, 1996. I know what it's like to be down there. So I've been humbled in this game a lot. But I had a personality bigger than life. And I had teammates that expected that bigger than life personality. And I kind of took on that role. And I'll tell you, some days it was tough coming to the ballpark going, all right, because it was a shtick. The Boone whole persona. Yeah, it was me,
mm-hmm.
but it was a little me plus a little bit. And some days I just didn't feel like being that. You know, I'm beaten down and I'm like, but if I go to the ballpark and I'm not that guy, you know, my teammates are they gonna panic? Or are we gonna win tonight? So I felt a little bit, and probably it was something I didn't even see. It's like I was making a bigger deal than it really was. But I thought, no, when I go to the ballpark, because I always preach, I want the same guy. I want the same level. I don't want you to get too high. I don't want you to get too low. I expect you to be the same guy when we're kicking ass
mm-hmm.
as when we're getting our ass beat. I don't need that guy that sucks his thumb in the corner when things are going bad and is doing cartwheels, have the music on 10 when anybody can turn on the music and do it, you know, have a beer and do a dance a jiggy when things are going great. I want to see the guy that just got his ass kicked, went through 0 for 15. We just lost 5 out of 6. I don't expect you to have a smile on your face and playing the music, but I also don't expect to see you pouting in the corner. So I preached that and I thought, I've got to be that guy. I've got to show wham, right? I got to show that level every single day. And it wasn't always easy. Do you find that in doing what you do?
This is the honest answer. I mean, everything I've said is honest, but it's a different question. And I appreciate that question because I know exactly what you mean. I think anybody who does what I do, you're always going to get a bit of a heightened presentation of who you are. All right. When the camera's on, you know, when you flip open a mic, and I'll give you a good example. Like I know Stephen A for life. I used to do a show with Stephen A. So I know his sisters. I had him on my show 2 months ago. So I know Stephen, you know, what's good? The bombastic Stephen A, who is the biggest star in the business. But I also know that when Steven walks into a room, he doesn't walk in quite like that, you know? It's, and he ramps up a little bit, and it's calculated, and he's brilliant, and he's cunning, and he's so good at this, right? For me, it's always been, easy is the wrong word, but it's never been a tough transition, whether it's 0 for 15 or one or two bad shows in a row to come in to be the same guy, because there's not much variance from what I'm doing now to, you know, who I am. Like if I'm sitting around at the fire pit, you know, I'm not going out to bars anymore. I'm a married man, you know, but every once in a while I do like a nice fire pit, couple of cold ones, guys I coach with in town, guys, you know, friends in town, coach their kids forever, you know, bang a few back after a long weekend, whatever, put the game on the outside TV. I'm the same guy. Like I'm generally the loudest, generally the most talkative. I think I've learned to listen a little bit more as I've gotten older, hopefully, but there are just days where it's not as naturally there, like especially now without a partner. Like if I was having a rough day, if like I was up late, my kids were sick, or I had an argument with my wife or something financial, whatever it might be, even if I wasn't in that perfect state of mind, which I usually am to start the show and do what I have to do, I knew Sal was just ready to go like a lunatic. And as soon as I hear that volume, right, bang, if I had a click in, which was rare, I would click in immediately. It is different when you're doing it by yourself because you're not relying on anybody. Like anything that you present visually, and I'm very animated with my hands, and I just, that's how I talk. That's how I speak. It's how I communicate. It is not a tough transition. It's not like I have to, oh God, I got the, all right, let's go. The show's starting now. Let's go. Come on, wake up. No, I'm just, I love what I do. I really, truly, like most of the guys in my business wanted to be Bob Costas or wanted to be, you know, Brent Musburger. I wanted to be Don Mattingly. Like, I wanted to be Donnie Baseball. You know, I wanted to be George Brett, Donnie first, but, you know, George Brett, Wade Boggs, like one of those dudes, right? Paul O'Neill. So to me, the passion that I had as a player, which was always like, I was always a tee rat and a ground ball rat, just wasn't good enough. But it's just, I don't know. It's like just naturally effervescent and naturally easy, not easy, but relative to what I'm saying, easy to do what I do. But I don't think that people, I know people don't give a shit if you had a rough night. Like, they don't care. They're flipping on the radio. Don't matter. Entertain me. Just like if your wife is sick, God forbid, or somebody's going through a divorce, their parent dies, and you got to get back in that batter's box or on that mound. The guy's talking about it on the radio the next day or tweeting about it. They don't care. And not that they're insensitive or callous. It's not that they're mean-spirited. They just don't have the bandwidth or the interest to incorporate that because it's a singular focus. Did you get a hit? Did you strike somebody out? Did you get the runner over? Did we win? Did we lose? Did you fumble? Did you make 5 threes or did you go 0-for-6 in a big game? And a lot of that sensitivity has been lost over time. I think social media has led to that. And the other thing too, Brett, is, you know, mentioned Mike and Chris, you know, much less, and they were phenomenal, much less competition. And for most of their existence together, they were not even on TV. So it was just on the radio. And if they messed up, they weren't going to get clowned on social media like this clip. Oh, look at this mistake that Stephen A made. Right. Look at this mistake BT made. And it gets 70,000, 100,000, 200,000, 500,000, a million. You do know, I think we're more, at least I am, more acutely aware of, hey, if you mess up, there's no hiding. Now, also, if you do something really well, you know, it's going to get out there and it's going to it's going to work for it. So it's both ways, but it's a great question. I think anybody who says that it's not a challenge on occasion is full of shit because we all have lives that are much more important than this. Now, I didn't make the money that you made. Like, this literally is my baseball career. You know what I mean? I'm putting out stats now that's going to get me paid and has gotten me paid thus far. So, you know, a guy like you, even though you love this and you're good at it, you're deeper and deeper into it, you have maybe less pressures, the wrong way to frame it, but I'm sure the bank account's fine. You played for a long time, hell of a player, made some bank, you know, you're good, kids are done at school, everything. I got young kids, you know, I just had a shift from WFAN to this. It is pressure, but you've just got to be able to compartmentalize, shut it off, and do your job. That's the simplest way I can say it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Piggybacking, you're going to know when you get it right. You know when you get it wrong. Mm-hmm. A lot of pressure in today's market with, like you said, the competition, how many outlets there are, where people get their news. And a lot of times it's, and you'll see in the news all the time, then there's a correction. It's more important to get it out than get it right. A lot of times it seems like.
Yep.
Biggest story in your career you ever got right where people said, oh, Brandon, you're full of crap. Oh, no, trust me, guys. And then all of a sudden, one day it came to fruition and you're just kind of sitting there smiling going, what were you saying?
Boy, that's a tough one. And I'm thinking about it. Not that there aren't any. And conversely, gotten some wrong, too. But keep in mind, Brad, I know you know this, but I've never been a news breaker. Right.
Right.
So like, say, a Schefter who's actually breaking news. So I here's what I would always tell my audience.
Well, It could be this. For example, Yankees are going to be horrible this year. And they win the World Series. Now everybody's going to bring back those clips. Oh, Tierney, how there's the Yankees looking right now? Egg on your I'm going to wear it. So that's
I got a good example. Question okay, good. Thank you. Okay, I got something for you. Now it's not over yet, but I hope I'm wrong. And the other thing, before I even tell you what it is, when you are wrong, I just, for transparency's sake, number one, you can't hide because it's everywhere. But you got to own it. You got to man up. Yo, I messed up. I was wrong. I'll take the L. Let's keep it moving. Right. Nobody's going to be perfect, but I'll tell you, I said about 2 months ago, I'm in my home office right now, and I looked into the camera that's right in front of me doing BT Unleashed on YouTube, and I said, break up the Knicks. Knicks aren't winning shit. They're not good enough. Mike Brown's going to be gone. Get rid of Cat. Too soft. Can't stand it. I'm done with this team. I'm rooting for them. They don't have it. They're not winning anything. And it wasn't like, well, maybe. It was very, very declarative. they are not winning anything right now. And I felt that. Now, what people miss, and I can't control this, it is what it is. I really don't care. They missed a lot of people, not all of them, but a lot of people missed the nuance. Because then when I started to say, like during the Hawks series and toward the end of the regular series, and obviously when they smacked the Sixers, now I get people coming and saying, oh, dude, you're a front runner. And I'm known to be a massive Knicks fan. Like that's one of the, as a Yankee fan as well, and Jets, like people know my fandom and people know I'm a good fan. So when people question my Knicks fandom, it hurts a little bit. But I'm like, guys, here's what you're missing. When I was saying what I was saying, I absolutely meant it and I absolutely believed it. The difference now is they are playing differently. Now they're running the offense through Karl Anthony Towns, which they were not doing when they were getting beat up by the Pistons in the regular season and losing 9 of 11 games, all right? Which means also, since there's been a shift in philosophy, that means the head coach, Mike Brown, has proven to be adaptable. Now, if the offense is going to run through Cat, that means your star player, Jalen Brunson, is going to have a little bit of a lower usage rate, which he's got to be okay with. So it's, I wasn't wrong. It's just a different version of the Knicks. But not everybody wants to hear that. And I'm fine. And listen, what I learned a long time ago, man, is when you dig in and you are, people think you're wrong, but it's kind of hijacked what you really said. I think if you chase your tail forever, trying to like, because there's always, it's like the whack-a-mole on the boardwalk when you go to a carnival, whatever. All right, here's this troll. I respond. I shut him up. All right, now, here's another. All right, God, here's another one. Right. All right, this guy, let me shut him up. You're never going to win because there's so many people like that. So my honest take is fuck them. I don't care because I've got enough belief in what I presented as a professional. I've been right a lot more than I've been wrong, and I've owned the losses, and there's been a good amount of them. So I think that people understand that it's authentic, it's sincere, and I'm old enough, and I'm in a place, and I was not like this when I was younger, when I was coming up. I was very sensitive to that stuff. I've been last maybe 5, 6, 7 years, much more at ease, not less passionate, but less caring as to what people think. As long as they think I'm a good person, I don't care about the other stuff. I just don't care.
It's amazing to me because I can sit there and you know, when it comes to baseball and breaking down baseball, I'm willing to go up against anyone on planet Earth to talk baseball nuances, anything you want, except for pitching mechanics. Uh-huh, not very good at that. But anything other than that, I'll put myself up against anyone on this earth right now. But doesn't mean I'm right all the time. It's like, hey, you were just talking about being right, being wrong. You know, I have before the season started, you know, we got our pregame show or I'm on a show. All right, Boone, make your picks. Who's going to win? I can tell you on paper, if everything goes good, not injuries coming into play here, who I think what I saw a year ago being back on the field and playing against all these teams, I can give you the best intel I can, you know, from experience that I can give you. I had Kansas City winning the Central, and I had the Mets winning in the East. Brett, okay, so how? Oh, Brett Boone, you really know a lot about baseball. I can tell you on paper what I saw. Doesn't mean I'm right. If this was easy, and just because you're a baseball expert, why wouldn't I take a couple million bucks, just go to Vegas, sit in the sports book if I know so much? Why?
I was going
to
say that.
Because I would lose in the long run like everybody else. I sit there and I go, there's no way that team should beat that team on this given day. Well, I didn't know that the pitcher was going to pull a hamstring in the first and we're going to bring it. It turns into a bullpen game. Yep. So as much as you can give from your experience and my life in the game, doesn't mean I'm right all the time. And I don't come across as thinking, oh, you better listen to me. Now, you want to talk about mechanics. You want to talk about this in the swing or how you play baseball or how you live the life on a daily basis. Okay, just ask me and I'll let you know. That brings me to this. It's easy for me. Baseball's easy for me. I can put my eyes on a game and I have a complete synopsis for you. Any game, that's easy for me. But when you go outside of it and you go to golf, so your job isn't just covering the Yankees.
No.
You've got to talk about general managers. You've got to talk about NILs in college basketball. Be well-versed on it. But you also have to be able to break down Caitlin Clark's mechanics on the hoop court and why she's successful. That for me is tough. That's for me is tough, is to really be able to go, all right, college basketball, St. John's. Okay, let's go to college football, Division II. Okay, we got to go to the Knicks tonight, Yankees, and I got to cover the AAA for the Kansas City Royals. There's this young hot prospect coming up. That's a lot. How do you do it? How do you weigh it all and kind of, because you kind of have to be pretty much decently versed on a lot of different topics and be able to talk intelligently about them. Doesn't mean you're an expert in all of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But to listen to you go, Brandon's making a good point about that. And I know nothing about it. You know, you got to be able to talk about golf a little bit. I don't know how much you talk about golf.
I do. But I love talking golf. I talk golf better than I play it. That's for damn sure. I know the game. I just can't. Listen, I remember there was a point where I'm like, I got to know it. I have to know everything. All right. I just didn't want to be exposed. And I generally was. Now, it's also a little bit easy for me. Easier. Again, it's all relative. Nothing's easy. But like, I genuinely was a massive sports fan growing up. And yeah, of course, I would watch the Yankees and then watch the Mets. My dad's an old Brooklyn Dodger, so National League guy. I don't know why I'm a Yankee fan, but I am. And you know, Mets. But and we watched the Knicks. We watched the Big East. And we'd watch and we'd talk about it. And I, unknowing to me at the point, I was basically doing radio shows with my dad. I've always said my dad's my first radio partner. Coming back from a basketball game, shooting the breeze about Mattingly or Hernandez or Dwight Gooden. Like, it's always been very natural to me. But I think the key thing, here's one of the tricks of the trade, and it's very hard to be able to do this, but when you can try to do this, or you at least become competent at doing this, I think you hit a new level. No one knows everything. I don't care how loud Stephen A. is, my boy, but how loud he says something, I know more than Stephen A. because he's not a big baseball guy. Like, but it's the presentation of authority. There's an art to it, right? And I think that it's important to be able to, for the audience to have to like, you've got to have conviction in what you're saying. This way, the audience could have that conviction. And I also think it's a little bit, again, relative easier. Like, Cashman's been here since the 90s. So, like, I don't really have to think much about his moves. I know them all. Your brother's been here almost a decade. I know everything that's happened. Torrey was here forever. I know everything that's happened. You know, Cohen's owned the team for 5 years. Before that, it was the Wilpons. I know everything that's happened. Dolan's owned the Knicks this entire century. I know everything that's happened. So I've got a database of recall just because I've always been, you know, I'm talking about as a seven-year-old, like a reader, baseball cards, you know, stuff like that. So I think I've always got a default of some historical reference that I can take and then like weave in to make a point. I think it's just being diverse. And it's all, but what one thing that has changed is that, you know, it's less about being a voice of authority. And it took me a little while to get this because I always want like Francesa. I always thought, even though he didn't, like, I always felt like this guy knows everything. This guy's connected to the Giants and the Yankees, which he was and still is to an extent. But it's now more about entertainment because anybody could Google something, anybody could like, so getting, being held on a higher level because people think you know everything doesn't really get you far anymore because there's so many points of reference. Baseball savant, I love that stuff. But like, you want to find out, all right, Austin Wells is hitting a .160. Is he squaring the ball up? Like, what's he doing? Let's do a deep. Is he chasing balls? Is he squaring them up? What's the barrel rate? Like, where are we at? Right. What's his expected slugging? All that shit that you know. And if you can at least take something from that and get anybody can say, dude, he's hitting 170. He sucks. But that also happened to Ben Rice early last year. Ben Rice was hitting into bad luck. And I remember your brother saying, you know, and of course I was watching the games and I didn't think that he was wrong. I'm like, let me just make sure he's not glossing over this. And all the numbers, I saw a lot of red on Savant, despite the numbers being low, OPS and the other metrics, the basic ones. I'm like, he's right. So anytime like Jazz is 1-for-20 or Volpe's in a funk or anybody really, but like a Grisham, anybody but a Judge really, or a Bellinger, who I know is going to be fine, I will do a deep dive and I can extrapolate from that. And now I could present it in a way from somebody who might be either too lazy to do that or just doesn't have the bandwidth or the interest in connecting numbers and then bringing a point that is unique to me. And that's the art of it. I mean, like a poet, somebody who writes poetry is able to like have this imagery in their mind and somehow put words on a piece of paper and create this amazing visual, right? Same thing with an author for a full book and same with the spoken and now the visual component. It's about the sell. And I don't mean just lying and selling shit you don't believe, but making it authentic. And when somebody goes to check you, you being able to say, well, I get it. I respect your opinion, but here's why you're wrong on Austin Wells, or here's why you're right on whomever it might be. It's a lot. It's a lot of work, dude. Like, and it's no different from you. Like, people think, all right, what time's Seattle playing tonight? All right, they're playing at the Phillies Interleague. They got a 7:05 first pitch at the Vet back then, right? You guys don't show up at 6:10 like you do for a Little League game. You're stretching. You're going through hitters meetings, and you coached, obviously, so you know this as well. Pitching tendencies, pitchers, catchers, pitcher. You're going off the machine. You're seeing what a guy's throwing. All the the stretching, the infield, loosening up the arm, getting a lift in maybe, getting a meal in. Like, you're there for hours, dude. And it might not be as physical nearly getting ready for a show and content, but it's really a similar structure, which is one of the reasons why I think, and I don't want to say that I'm good at this. I'll let others say that or not. But one of the reasons why I'm prepared a lot is because I was a grinder as an athlete, and it does come naturally. Like, I enjoy the process of getting ready to do a show, just like I enjoyed getting to the dugout, throwing a dip in, putting my cleats on, banging off the tee, long toss, and hanging out with the four or five guys that would get there early and playing ball. Like, I just enjoy that stuff, you know?
And I think it goes back to what you say. The reason that you are well-versed on a wide range of topics is because what you said, you're a fan first. You yep. grew up a fan. You're a fan.
Oh, yeah.
And I keep referring back to my buddy that I grew up with from Jersey. He didn't play sports past high school.
Mm-hmm.
But that sucker knows everything. He's kind of like you. He knows everything. Now, he couldn't do what you do in front of the camera. He gets a little camera shy. But I'll tell you what, I have Tommy Lloyd coming on from the University of Arizona during the tournament. Mm-hmm. And I kind of started watching U of A because his daughters go to U of A. Hey, you should watch this U of A basketball team. I started watching a little bit. I'm not a big hoops guy. But I kind of started like, hey, this U of A team's good. I get Tommy Lloyd to come on the podcast, and I call my buddy. I'm like, all right, tell me the nuances of this U of A team. He starts diving in and talking yeah. about incoming class and recruits. But then I could call him, hey, I'm having the GM of the Eagles on, and he'll be like, oh, this kid with the Eagles that we got for should have got this guy in this, and he knows everything.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about, I call him about the Kentucky Derby. Who's going to win? Well, this is a 3-year-old that I've got, and he'll just go through the whole thing. He's a fan. He mm-hmm. loves sports in general, and there's nothing he can talk surfacely on any sport, any activity, and knows some history of it, which is I lean on him a lot when I get outside my arena.
Yeah.
And I'll have a baseball player on. Or someone in the world of baseball. We're going to talk about something that's a little out of my wheelhouse. I'll call my buddy. I'll be like, all right, give me a couple knickknacks on this and what, and you know, let me act like I know a little bit, even though I'll kind of divulge that. Hey, I'm a layman.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
learning. You
yeah.
teach me. You teach
yep.
me.
Yep. Well, but even with your buddy, think about this. So he's giving you information on the horses. I promise you he doesn't win the Derby every year. You know, he's telling you about U of A, right? I promise you he's not winning his NCAA bracket every year. So that goes back to what we said before. It's about presentation. It's about conviction. It's also about research and at least putting yourself in a position to be successful, like the tee work and knowing what somebody's going to throw and when they're going to throw it from your point of view, or me being ready to do a show. You know, it's also really one of the only things, and it's changed a little bit, you know, certainly with COVID and politics infiltrated sports. But for most of my lifetime, sports has been like the one fun thing in the world. You know what I mean? Where it's a little different now. It is a micro dissection. And, you know, you know now where athletes stand politically because they're going to let you know. And that's the new world. And you know, I don't love it, but that's fine. I respect you. Say whatever you want. Say what you believe. Just be respectful. Let's have a civil discourse. But growing up, and I know for a fact, forget about like whether it was Mattingly or Billy Martin or Darryl or Doc. I had no idea what they thought politically. I didn't even grow up in a household where I ever heard my parents once discuss, you know, with any sort of like negativity or energy or anger about presidents. I mean, now you got 79-year-olds. They know who my parents voted for, who my parents did. I love Obama. I hate Obama. I love Trump. I hate Trump. And it's just a lot of shit that's bubbling around. So at least when you are immersed in sports, still kind of, for the most part, it's still kind of fun. So when something's fun, you're going to want to absorb it and inhale it and learn as much about it as you can. I mean, listen, I mean, putting away money for the college, for the kids and life insurance for, you know, hopefully a long time down the road and like real, real life things, man. I mean, who the hell wants to talk about that? I can promise you when the boys come over and I light the fire pit. Yeah, I'm not saying we'll never broach into that stuff, but we're laughing. I'm talking about golf. Let's go on a trip. The game we just coached, the Yankees, the Mets, whatever it might be, the Knicks. We're not sitting there talking about these morbid things, you know, so sports still fun, dude, for the most part.
Yeah, it's entertainment and it's an escape. And you're right. When I was growing up, politics were not a thing. I try to tell my kids nowadays because I've got, you know, my youngest are 21. I've got a stepdaughter who's 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And politics comes up all the time.
I said,
do you realize when I was 18, when I was 21, it wasn't a thing. It wasn't a thing. I can honestly tell you this, my career in the big leagues, my career in the minor leagues and big leagues combined,
mm-hmm.
not one time ever was there a discussion, an argument politically in any locker room I was ever a part of. That's how much politics wasn't a thing. In this mm-hmm. modern era, it's just different. It's just different. Kids, I hear young kids talking politics and I'm like,
yeah.
This is so strange. Politics was not what we talked about as kids. You got 12-year-olds. We were worried about moving the net, the street hockey net out of the street for the car to go by.
Yeah.
These guys are talking politics.
I know.
It's not good. It's not good for somebody your age to have a, first of all, you have no clue what you're talking about.
True.
Secondly, to sit there and have a verbose political opinion.
Oh, come on, man.
I just keep it out as much as I can.
Well, Brett, think about for that 11 or 12-year-old kid who is talking about that. Think about, I'm pretty sure that whatever side they lean on has been shaped on.
Right.
Exactly. So is it really fair? Is it really balanced? Is it
right?
Not,
right. And you give kids, you know. I think with like anything in life, because, you know, most of the kids are all grown up now, but, you know, we go through a lot of trials and tribulations with our kid and we learn a lot of lessons. We do a lot of things that aren't right. We do a lot of things that are right. And we pat ourselves on the back when we do good.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing is just, I always say this and I say it to my kids now, even the ones that are 24 years old, 23 years old. I said, listen, we could be talking about a friend. I said, he's just a kid. She's just a kid. Well, she's an adult. Yeah, I understand. But I said, I put myself back to when I was 20. You know, I got to the big leagues, I think, when I was 22.
Mm-hmm.
I knew everything. Just ask me. But really, yeah. I knew nothing.
Nothing.
I was about to go on a journey,
yeah.
which would shape a humble journey, getting my butt kicked, getting off the floor and coming back, getting on top. Those were all life lessons. But when I was 22, I knew it all. So all these guys that are 22, 23, I got 21-year-old twins. They know everything.
They know everything. Didn't you know that?
And I said, I give them all mulligans. I said, listen,
yeah.
This is, I don't judge you. I don't judge an 18-year-old on your opinions. And they're always strong, right? Because they mm-hmm. Googled it.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Dad, I Googled it. Oh, well, that makes it. That's the Bible. So I said, here's the deal. When you're a kid, you're a kid. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. You're about to go into real life here in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're 30 and you're still the same as you're 20, well, now I have to treat you as an adult. And now I'm going to have an opinion on what you're talking about. But when you're a kid, you get mulligans with me.
Oh, when we were, absolutely. When we were kids, I mean, you know, I had to learn, we all did, learn the 50 states and the capitals and all that stuff. Now the kids are like, this is a sanctuary state. This is a Republican state. Like, I didn't think about that once. Not literally.
It didn't exist. It didn't. I laugh at people in sports when they talk. Well, how, you know, conservative versus. I said, listen, when I was playing and people don't believe it, you know, especially mm-hmm. young fans, because they've grown up in an era where it's everything. I said, you don't understand. We didn't talk about this. This was not a thing when we came to the ballpark. You know, you knew who was conservative and who didn't want high taxes and, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to
say religion and a little
right,
religion.
Right. But it wasn't a thing. It wasn't a thing where whether you were Republican or a Democrat, you sat at the dinner table and you might have like a tiny bit of difference, but You're going to have a good time and have. Nowadays, I look around and it's like polar. You're either crazy one side or crazy. Anyway, that's why
you're right. Dude, I remember. So my junior year in high school. Before my senior year, I was playing on this team called the Bronx Angels. Right. One of the best teams I ever played on. Now I'm in Brooklyn, which is, you know, in terms of driving for 6 o'clock games, is not around the corner getting to the Bronx. Right. So it was myself and two of my high school teammates. The only white kids on the team, right? Spanish, black, right? And they had the Dominican flags. And it was, number the baseball was phenomenal. And shortly after that, I had a chance to go to Santo Domingo and play in a tournament in college, like during the summer. And like, I look back at those days and actually we kind of did listen to the same music now that I think about it. But like, it was just like, you know, it's frustrating and it's polarizing. But back then it was like, that's the sanctity of the locker room. That's why sport, I mean, 1% of less than that make money playing sports, right? But it's going into, you know, if you're, you know, two white kids on an all black basketball team, guess what? Now you have a better understanding how to work with each other, how to rely on each other, what you're thinking. I'm talking about back in the day, cut some jokes, make some fun of each other, stuff you can't do now. And, you know, and I thought that was just, that's how barriers were broken. People think that they're breaking down barriers now by talking about it the way they do. They're actually putting up higher walls. The more you stuff it down somebody's face, the wall gets higher and then the disconnect gets wider, which is the opposite of really what a lot of the locker rooms used to be when we were younger, you know?
There's a resent factor that sneaks in.